According to the Tibetan tradition, or rather according to an ancient Indian tradition preserved in Tibetan sources, the question of the building of a monument, as it were, over the remains of the Buddha after his death had been mooted even during the Buddha's lifetime. And we are told, according to this tradition, that the disciples, while the Buddha was still alive, had come to him and they'd asked what sort of monument, what sort of mound, or what sort of stupa, if you like, they should erect over his remains after his death. And according to this tradition, according to this account, the Buddha had responded in a rather Zen-like sort of way. He didn't say anything. He didn't tell them anything, didn't describe anything. He just showed them. So what did he do? He was wearing three robes. Tichivra. That's the standard set, as it were. There's one round the waist, one over the shoulder, and there's an extra big and thick one, which is used sometimes as a blanket, that is to say at night, and sometimes as a sort of cloak, especially in the rainy season, if one happens to be going about. So he took this thick outer robe with this cloak, and he folded it into four, and then he folded it into four again. So in this way, folding and folding the robe, he produced a sort of rough cube of cloth. And having done that, he took his begging bowl, the bowl with which he went for alms into the villages, begging his food. He took his begging bowl, which was probably black and lacquered, and he placed the begging bowl upside down on the folded rope. And he said, "Make my stupa just like that." And this, in fact, is what, later on, the disciples actually did. And this is the simplest form of stupa, the earliest form of stupa. In other words, a cube form surmounted by a sphere or sometimes a hemisphere. This is the earliest, most primitive form of the stupa. Later on, as the centuries rolled by, the stupa became much more complicated. In fact, it became very complex indeed. It became architecturally, even artistically more complex, and also very much more complex in meaning and significance. And eventually, after several hundred years of development, not only in India, but in Ceylon and Burma and Tibet, and China and Japan, it became, in various ways, a sort of three-dimensional symbol of the teaching itself, the Dharma itself. So that, we may say, to write the history of the stupa, as it went all over Asia, is practically to write the history of Buddhism itself. And the stupa became more and more complex, architecturally, artistically, and in its meaning, partly by way of progressive incorporation of symbols. For instance, the sphere, or the hemisphere, eventually became surmounted. Fairly early in the history of the Indian stupa, became surmounted by a square box-like structure, sometimes surrounded by a railing. And this square, box-like structure, placed on top of the sphere or the hemisphere, represents the Vedic, that is to say the pre-Buddhistic, Brahminical or Hindu, fire altar, the altar on which the sacred fire was kindled. And again, eventually, this box-like structure, this fire altar, this hearth, if you like, came to be surmounted by an honorific umbrella, or ceremonial umbrella. In fact, it came to be surmounted by three or more umbrellas, one on top of the other. Sometimes there were nine umbrellas, one on top of the other. Sometimes there were 13. And these multiple honorific umbrellas represented the tree of life, the cosmic tree, the tree beneath whose branches, according to some of the accounts, the Buddha sat on the night of his original great enlightenment. So that we can see that all sorts of associations, all sorts of significances begin to be associated with the stupa and the symbolism of the stupa. The 13-fold umbrella, for instance, which we find crowning the stupa very late in the history of its development, the 13-fold umbrella represents the 13 stages of spiritual progress through which the bodhisattva passes on his way to supreme enlightenment. But we are not concerned with all this at present. I've dealt with this, at least in part and in some detail in some cases, on previous occasions in previous lectures. Tonight we're concerned with the tantric symbolism of the stupa. In other words, we're concerned with the specifically tantric elements which became incorporated into the stupa during the Vajrayana, or tantric phase, of development of Buddhism in India. And I've spoken about the development of the stupa in general only by way of providing a certain amount of background information for those who might not have been familiar with the subject before. Because after all, one won't get very far with the tantric symbolism of the stupa if one doesn't even know, to begin with, what a stupa itself is.